time. My name is Jason Lopes. I live in Scotts Valley, and I love listening to Gangland Wire on my app, Podcast Addict. It's awesome. Have a great time. I love listening to any mob stories, any crime like that these guys put on. You guys are great. Thank you very much. Keep up the good work. Have a great day.
Evening, folks. You are listening to Gangland Wire, and we love this podcast in Scotland.
Former Kansas City Police Department intelligence detective and now attorney Gary Jenkins produced 4 documentary films, most recently Gangland Wire, creator of smartphone app entitled Kansas City Mob Tours. Download it now. If you like what you hear, go to ganglandwire.com. Navigate to the shop page. We need you to put a hit out on our donate button. Gangland Wire True Crime Stories is produced at the Big Dumb Fun Show Studio 4. And now, here's Gary Jenkins.
Well, good evening, all you wiretappers out there. It's good to be here in the Ice House, classic old Ice House in Midtown Kansas City. I'm here with my good friend and co-host, Aaron. Say hello, Aaron.
Hello, Aaron.
We are back with episode 2 of the Greenlee's kidnapping story. One afternoon, I came home from school in the St. Joseph newspaper, which was the closest town to where I lived, had a big headline, Greenlee's body found in St. Joseph, Bonnie Hetty's backyards dug up, or something along those lines. Scared the heck out of me, because I was the same age as Bobby Greenlee's, and it just, when something happens and you find a little kid killed like that and he's your same age, it just makes, I don't know, it made me feel really vulnerable. The culprits, Carl Austin Hall and Bonnie Hetty. Bonnie Hetty was from St. Joe and lived up there all of her life, and Carl Austin Hall was from another rural Missouri town. Both of them had grown up in some kind of privilege. Carl Austin Hall had drank away all his privilege and actually served a little time for robbing taxi cabs. Came back out and he met up with this Bonnie Hetty. They were horrible alcoholics. They drank all the time, drinking all the way through this whole kidnapping plot. But Carl Hall would tell people later, after he was arrested for this crime, when he was in the penitentiary for the cab robbery, he wanted to come up with a grand plan to obtain enough money where he never had to worry about money again, where he could be restored to his former place of privilege that he had enjoyed when he was a child.
The big score.
The big score, the one big score. There's, how many movies have you seen, Aaron, where they were going to have the one big score and they come up with a plan, and there's always some goofy people in it that screw things up?
Well, usually it only works if they have, like, George Clooney.
And Brad Pitt.
Yeah,
and,
then somehow it works out. But
they're in Las Vegas, and somehow that works out. Well, in real life, for real-deal criminals, the big plan, the big score, never really works out. And especially not when you and your partner are a couple of horrible alcoholics.
Well, but Greenlee's had gone to a private school.
Right, Notre Dame de Sion. They call it Sion. It's a private
Catholic
school. Catholic private school here in Kansas City, not too far from where we're sitting right now. They sent Body Hetty over there, and he told one of the nuns, there was a brand new young nun at the front desk, and she said that Bobby Greenlee's mother had been struck with a heart attack, and she was sent to take Bobby to the hospital. So they thought that, this looked good. Sounded good to them. The nun didn't know any better. Bobby Greenlee's was called out. He walked up and immediately took Bonnie Hetty's hand and acted like he knew her. She walked off with him, and they killed him about an hour, 30 minutes to an hour later, drove him across state line, triggering the Lindbergh law. Anytime you take a kidnapped victim across state line, it triggers the Lindbergh law, and the FBI gets involved. Although FBI really didn't have to get too involved in this, as you'll find out. Killed him over in Overland Park, Kansas. Took his body back up to St. Joe and buried it. And that's where I came in. That's where that headline that scared me so bad.
In the backyard of the woman who was the kidnapper.
Right.
You could have buried it like next door.
Yes.
Throwing the trail off a little bit.
The Missouri River runs between Kansas City and St. Joe. Why don't you just pull up one of those bridges and throw that body over in the river?
Because somebody would have found it then. Now,
Maybe so, maybe not.
These guys must have been worried. They you know, they got the money. These guys paid the ransom, and they
They got $600,000.
We're gonna head back to St. Joe and got nervous, according to Wikipedia, and took off for St. Louis.
I'm not sure why they chose St. Louis, other than just another city they figured they could hide in and be anonymous. They get down to St. Louis, they ditch the car, and they started using taxi cabs, and they started bar hopping. They had all this money and nothing to do. They rented a small apartment in South St. Louis, probably down there by where our friend lives there. That's kind of south of downtown.
Martin J. McNally.
Yeah, and so they rented a small apartment. Hall puts Hetty, she's really drunk one night. He puts her in the apartment that they've rented. He leaves a few thousand dollars for her, and then he takes off to live the good life on his own. He hails a taxi cab. The cab driver's an ex-con and kind of a hip guy that knows, you know, knows the game, shall we say, knows all the spots. He has the cab driver find him a prostitute. All three of them are drinking together now. They end up at the Coral Courts Motel in St. Louis County, out in the county outside the city. This Coral Courts is a local place in St. Louis that is well known, where a guy can stay for a while with nobody asking any questions. Yeah, kind of what we call a hot sheet motel. You can rent it by the room and nobody asks what's going on. Each of the, if you've seen these out in the, they were real popular back in the 50s out in the kind of what would have been the suburbs at the time. They're not the suburbs anymore. They are units, and each unit has its own garage with a garage door, so you could pull the garage in, pull a car in the garage at your hotel and close the door, and nobody would even know you were there. It was right off of Route 66, which passes through St. Louis on its way down to Tulsa on west, the famous Route 66. Coral Courts had been built in 1941 by John Carr, a man who was long rumored to be mob-connected and had run a brothel in St. Louis for years. So it kind of had a mob connection, which will come into play in a little bit. Carl Austin Hall, he lavished money on the cab driver. He gave him all the money he wanted and on the prostitute. The prostitute would later say that Carl Hall stayed so drunk and he was so nervous that he could never get it up. He could not perform sexually, shall we say. Carl Hall kept giving this cab driver money and really converted him to his own personal valet and would send him out to buy clothes, send him out to whatever he wanted, and he just stayed in the hotel. Cab driver was really curious about where this stranger from out of town, from Kansas City, had gotten so much money. They knew he must have scored, made some kind of a big score. A guy like this was not a legitimate guy. The owner of the cab company was a mob-connected guy named Joe Costello. When he told Joe Costello about this free-spending customer, Costello then called the St. Louis police connection. He had a lieutenant named Lewis Shoulders. Now, Lewis Shoulders was a mob-connected guy himself. They will eventually deny that they stole a ransom money, but Costello told Shoulders this whole scheme and the whole setup and where he was, and they even would later say that he figured that Carl Austin Hall was a Greenlease kidnapper, given the amount of money that he had and was showing around. Okay, he gave Shoulders the name and address of the hotel, motel, which Shoulders, of course, already knew where this place was.
Wait, so what you're saying is the cab driver went back to his boss, who turned out to be Joe Costello, who was mob connected, and Joe Costello then went to somebody that he knew in the police force, who was Lieutenant Lewis Shoulders, and said, hey, this is all what's going on. And then Carl Hall lost the money before he got captured.
Yeah.
After he left Hetty in the middle of the night in that rented room with a couple thousand dollars, it says here he contacted a criminal associates in an attempt to divert police attention. One of those associates, a former prostitute named Sandra O'Day. I don't know if you ever saw that information. This is just from Wikipedia. Was supposed to fly to Los Angeles and mail a letter Hall had written. It was thought that this would divert police attention from St. Louis. However, O'Day caught a glimpse of the ransom money and decided to do some diverting of her own. St. Louis police soon learned that Hall had flaunted large sums of money, and they brought him in for questioning.
Yeah, Lieutenant Shoulders and his driver, a patrolman named Elmer Dolan, responded to the coral courts and took Hall into custody. Now, it will come out later that they did take a large suitcase and a footlocker stuffed with $550,000 in cash into the station. But later testimony would reveal that no one actually saw them bring the suitcase in at the time they said they did. And when they actually counted out this money, they counted out $300,000. So there was another $250,000 that went missing. Once he was arrested, Hall immediately broke down on Bonnie Hetty. The police went down to this apartment, and she was arrested. Both of them then gave full statements to the police and told where the body was. October the 7th, 1953, police, and for some reason they alerted the reporters. That's why they had such lurid headlines and great photos that I saw when I was a little kid, raced up to Hetty's house in St. Joe where they dug up Bobby's body. There was widespread rage at the murder of Bobby. People were livid about this, his poor, innocent little boy. At the same time, down in St. Louis, they began an investigation into the missing ransom money. Now, you know, they know that he got $600,000. They know that he was telling people he had over $500,000 down in St. Louis. When he's arrested, the police counted out Lieutenant Shoulders and Patrolman Dolan. They've only got $300,000. So there's between $250,000 and $300,000 missing. We know he spent a certain amount of money. That was pretty slick, I forgot about that. I'd read that in a book earlier that he had that prostitute. He gave her enough money to fly out to Los Angeles and then mail a letter back to the Greenlease family, which would indicate that the kidnappers were in Los Angeles, not in St. Louis. This guy was too clever by half. He thought he was smarter than everybody, didn't he, Aaron?
But then he thought he could trust this prostitute.
Exactly.
And he thought he could trust a cab driver flashing out all this money.
It was connected to the mob and an ex-con himself. And he didn't really know any of these people. This is the first time he'd ever met them.
It seemed odd, though, in part. I guess I'm not a criminal, but I wouldn't go admitting I committed the murder.
That's
a different charge, isn't it, than... I guess they could have the death penalty for crossing a state line in a kidnapping.
Right.
I guess they could have it anyway. So
you
maybe
can get
it
death penalty
matter.
Anyway. For some reason, who knows?
I was thinking, you know, wouldn't you just be like, well, I don't know what happened to the kid. He was annoying and we dropped him off. You've never found him. I can't find him.
Yeah, you could say that.
I mean, I'm just saying it would be as opposed to, well, the body's here.
Once again.
Dig it up. There's, you know, pretty substantive evidence. You know, the brutality of the murder.
Right.
Right there, as opposed to, well, you know, we don't know where he went. But
once again, you're applying logic to an addle-brained alcoholic. People feel guilt. Now, everybody doesn't, but in these criminal circles, but this guy probably felt guilt. Once he got sobered up, realized the enormity of what he had done, he wanted to unburden himself. So they both admitted to it and allowed him to find the body. Now, maybe they gave him the Christian burial speech. We need to find the body so we can give the kid a Christian burial.
Maybe.
And it worked.
I'm kind of curious. Have you interrogated anybody before?
Sure, plenty of times.
Would it be inappropriate if you knew they had a drinking problem to offer them a drink?
It wouldn't really work. I mean, you might. You might offer them, you know, well, we'll get you a drink if you'll do this. You might try to do a little trade-off.
You get them drunk and then they start talking.
Oh,
well,
you know.
So are there any, I guess.
Probably most of us that ever did that wouldn't be above that. I don't think it works.
Was there any theories as to what happened to the money?
Well, sure. Lieutenant Shoulders, a corrupt policeman connected to the mob, a mob-connected cab company owner who tells the police, what do you think? It's never been found, I'll tell you that right now. Carl Hall would also give a statement besides admitting to the murder. He would say, I feel sure that all the ransom money was with me at the time of my arrest and the police had it. They resigned themselves to being executed and never really fought it. A federal jury in Kansas City returned a verdict just within, you know, probably a month or two after they were arrested. And it was said that Hetty smiled upon hearing the verdict. Most people, most observers at the time would believe that Bonnie Hetty was truly repentant for the murder of Bobby Greenlease, but they didn't really believe that Carl Hall had any remorse. There was a reporter that talked to him on death row, and he just did not feel like, you know, he had any remorse at all. They took a statement down in St. Louis. Prosecuting attorney went down to the penitentiary after the sentence of death and took a statement from Hall. He had nothing left to lose. They were still frantically trying to solve the mystery of the missing money. Here's what Carl Hall said. I'll read this directly. Realizing that my execution for the kidnapping and murder of Bobby Greenlease is near at hand, I'm giving this statement as being exactly the truth of my handling of the ransom money in St. Louis, October 5th and 6th, 1953. I feel sure that all the money was with me in the townhouse at the time of my arrest. That's where he was arrested. I could see the keys on a bureau of the closet after Lieutenant Shoulders had taken them from me. There was a light on in the closet, and I could see the keys as I left the apartment with the police. I was the last one to leave the apartment. I have given the above statement freely and voluntarily, knowing that my death is near at hand and being very anxious to tell the entire truth about this matter. Signed, Carl Austin Hall, Cell 25, State Penitentiary, Jefferson City, Missouri, November 30th, 1953. 81 days, Aaron, 81 days after the kidnapping, Carl Austin Hall and Bonnie Brown Hetty are executed side by side. They took both of them into the gas chamber.
At the same time.
At the same time and sat them down. They had declined to seek mercy at the trial and declined to appeal once they were convicted. Bonnie Hetty was the only woman ever to be executed in Missouri's gas chamber. Maybe in any gas chamber. I think in any gas chamber. Witnesses to the execution said that Hetty chirped on cheerfully as she was led into the gas chamber, and while she was being strapped in, and finally Carl Austin Hall said, "Well, you just be quiet." Can you imagine that? they go to their death side by side.
And you still have to listen to her.
He had to listen to her, and he told her to shut up.
She was probably pretty mad because he left her with a couple $1,000 in cash, so... She probably didn't feel bad about his dying either. Here it says that Hetty was one of only two women since 1865 to be executed by federal authorities. The other one was Ethel Greenglass Rosenberg.
Spies, they were executed. Let's go back to Lieutenant Shoulders and Officer Dolan.
Yeah. I mean,
they would be charged with perjury for lying about the sequence of events that occurred from the time they arrested Hall until the time when the money was brought into the police station and counted. So there was some discrepancies on what happened between the time they left the apartment with the money, the hotel, motel with the money, and the time they got it in the police station.
Well, you would think that between the two of them, right? Lieutenant Lewis Shoulders and Elmer Dolan,
yeah,
that they would get their story straight, whatever story that was.
Well, I think they kind of did. Here was part of the problem is Shoulders was more like a hardened criminal. He was a connected guy, a corrupt policeman, all of his life a corrupt policeman. Elmer Dolan was not. He was just kind of a guy... Young guy caught up in events and by his corrupt lieutenant. He was just there. So he probably was not really exactly brought into the confidence of Shoulders, and he was the reason some of his statements caused discrepancies with Lieutenant Shoulders.
But they never did find the cash.
Never found the cash. And so
So Lieutenant Shoulders leaves the police force? You don't know.
Yeah, Shoulders is gone. So is Dolan.
But they don't. That's it. They just they dismiss them from the police force, and somebody's running around with $300 and some thousand dollars.
And some of the bills did show up in Chicago, of all places.
How much later?
You know, I can't remember. Over the next couple, 3 years, a few years later, some of the bills showed up. Not enough, really, for anybody to do anything. They brought Hall in the station, but the money was still back in the hotel, the apartment.
Then they brought the money.
They left Hall there. They went back and got the money, took half of it out, and brought the remaining half into the station. Now, Hall's statement directly contradicts that of Shoulders and Dolan, since Hall maintained the money was left behind in the apartment, while they said it was taken into custody at the time of the arrest. So there's a discrepancy there.
Here under the Wikipedia, it says there were some, you know, speculation and theories accounting for the missing cash, including that Hall had tried unsuccessfully to bury the cash near the Merrimack River. It says here the FBI searched the area in vain. Also, of course, the suitcases that Hall's in possession that ended up in question with Lieutenant Lewis Shoulders and Patrolman Elmer Dolan, who were perjured. And here it says the cash fell into the hands of mobsters or was hidden in the walls of the motel. Now, in 1995, the Coral Court Motel was demolished and nothing turned up.
There's some release of some of the FBI documents, and Dolan, like I said, he was not the hardened criminal that Shoulders was. He gave him a statement, but he refused to sign it. And he said he had seen, after this whole thing was over, he had seen the missing money in Joe Costello's apartment subsequent to Hall's arrest. And he said that Lieutenant Shoulders was there with Costello, but that he, Dolan, had refused to accept any of the money. There's no doubt that Lieutenant Shoulders and Costello were close friends. They had known each other. They'd driven cabs together when they were younger.
The real question is, how did they split the money?
Well,
you know.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, I'll tell you how they split it. The mob got it. Once Costello got it, he had to kick some of it to his boss, of course. He kept some of it. Lewis Shoulders had become a power in a mob-dominated St. Louis Steamfitters Union, which was controlled by Buster Wortman in the 1950s after he left the police department. So he continued working with the mob, only just went over to the Steamfitters Union, which they controlled. Where's Bobby Greenlee buried?
I'm reading here, and there's a photo there of him with his dad as well. Born February 3rd, 1947, Kansas City, Jackson County, Missouri. He died September 28th of 1953. They say Lenexa in Johnson County, Kansas. He is, where's this at? All right. Yeah. Cause of death is a murder, gunshot to the head. He's buried at Forest Hill Cemetery in Kansas City, Missouri, in Jackson County. Says here, plot, the Abbey Mausoleum. Walk in the front door straight to the very back room with the window on the left.
Yeah, there's a really good book. I've read the book. There's a really good book on that. It tells a lot more about Shoulders and his history and his connection to the Steamfitters Union and the Syrian mob and the Italian mob. And the St. Louis Police Department at the time was filthy dirty. All right, I think we've beat that one to death, Aaron. If you have a friend or relative or a loved one that has a problem with drugs or alcohol, make your first call to First Call. Call 816-361-5900 or go to their website, www.firstcallkc.org. What do you got to say to that, Aaron?
I've got to say folks need to buy the documentary that started it all, Gangland Wire, available on Amazon as a streaming video, or you could make a $25 donation or more, and Gary would send you one of his few left autographed copies of the DVD as long as you live inside the United States. And remember to get the latest book from Gary Jenkins, Leaving Vegas.
How FBI wiretaps ended mob domination of Las Vegas casinos.
And subscribe, share, and support Gangland Wire We need you to become one of our Made Mob members.
Go to the donate page and you'll find out just how much it costs to be a made guy in this little mob family we've got here. You know, you can get in trouble for selling mob memberships, Aaron.
You can?
Do you remember that? Well, Albert Anastasia, Murder Incorporated.
Other,
he got
other mob members that don't like you selling.
Albert Anastasia got in trouble for doing that. Shut down the books for a while.
He was selling them for like $1,000. We've got one for $10.
I think it was $50,000, but yeah, I've got one for $10.
Yeah, you could be a soldado.
$25.
Or maybe a capo regime for $35. Plus, you'll get 5 extra episodes and the book Leaving Vegas and immunity from prosecution from local police.
As long as you don't get caught.
Become a Soto Capo, a Don, or a Capo de Tutte. It's a Capo de Tutte de Capi.
That's the boss of all bosses.
The boss of all bosses. For your city, you could be the Don. For $100, we'll send you a Gangland Wire coffee cup. Plus, all of the prizes available if you're a associate soldado, capo regime, or soda capo. Plus, we'll provide protection from the cops and rival families. And remember to download the Kansas City Mob Tour app. Did I say that?
I think you did. All right, let's end this, baby. Aaron, say goodnight, Aaron.
Goodnight, Aaron. Music provided by Odd-O-Matic. Follow them on Twitter at Odd-O-Matic Music. Police found the body of Bobby Greenlease on October 7th, 1953, which turned out to be Gary Jenkins' birthday, and was taken to the Merrill Hoffer Fleeman Funeral Home in St. Joseph, Missouri, where it was identified by the Greenlease family dentist, Dr. Herbert Eversole of Kansas City. Police recovered the 2 bullets fired by Hall at the boy in the 1951 Plymouth station wagon of Bonnie Heady.
You know,
he didn't even get the kid out of the car.
Really? Kind of an interesting thing about the St. Louis mob. We did a story on this. I guess I haven't released it yet, is actually in St. Louis, the Italian mob does not have much power. The Syrian mob, people with roots, family ancestors and roots back to Syria, has a lot more influence in a lot of things, and Shoulders was connected to them because they had influence over this steam fitters union. Costello, if he got the money, he had a guy above him in the what little bit of Italian mob there is, a guy named John Vitale. He would have had to share some of it with him. Now, some of the suppositions, and some of it ended up in Chicago, would be that they would have had a connection to Chicago. But in fact, the St. Louis Italian La Cosa Nostra mob was subservient to Detroit and the Purple Gang in Detroit and the Toco family and some of our friend Alan Lindblom's people up there. So a lot of things don't make sense about what happened to this money. For sure, I think Louis Shoulders and Elmer Dolan got half the money. They left it with Costello. They end up getting arrested. They probably can't touch the money at the time. Costello does something with it. We don't know exactly what.
Probably launders it.
He may have laundered it himself. He would have had to pay some other people off because all those mob guys would have been the Syrian and the Italian mob guys would have been looking for that money, and they would know that he had he was the last person to be seen with it.
Well, even though they may have noted and published that the serial numbers of all those bills, that's a lot of bills. And if you're just kind of a regular Joe, like you would think, you know, how would I spend this money? I know they've got it traced 120 at a time.
Sure.
Going to a restaurant. Oh, hey, I'm going to get a burger and a drink, and there's $20.
Yeah.
No one's going to look at that.
Or you could even, at this point in time.
When's the last time you've actually ever sat there and looked at it? The only time I ever look at a serial number on a bill is when I think the bill is fake.
Right. Nobody ever looks at serial numbers. Or you could even, at this point in time, you could go out and buy a whole house full of furniture and give them, you know, $1,000 and 20s. Nobody'd think anything about it. Nobody would look at that. They just throw it in the cash register and go on. You go out and buy a car for, you know, $1,200, $1,500. People wouldn't think too much about it. This was before credit cards and before credit, and people debt a lot more in cash in 1950s anyhow. Yeah. So it'd be easy to get rid of that money or just live a decent life. You just couldn't go out and buy a, you know, $1 million mansion with it, or even a $10,000 mansion with all cash, more than likely.
That would be a little suspicious. But
that would be, of course. I think you could probably
keep a prostitute and a cab driver.
Yeah.
At least for a while.
Or you could be, if you were smart, you could be like this drug dealer. I remember one time, you know, drug dealers get all this cash, and what do they do with their cash? You know, they bundle it up. Pretty soon they've got a whole room full of cash, and they don't know what to do with. I've heard them complain about that. What this guy did is he started buying inexpensive houses, ghetto houses, basically, over on the east side or over northeast, buy, you know, $10,000, $12,000 houses, maybe make like half down payment. You know, $5,000 down payment for a $20,000 house. And then he'd hire all these small businessmen, carpenters and electricians and painters and all that. And he'd fix them all up and he'd pay them all in cash. And then he'd turn around and sell a house. And then you'd launder your money. And that way you would get the check back on the house.
And have what would appear to be legitimate money.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he laundered a lot of money doing that. That's kind of a big deal. That's why they came up with that CTR, a cash transaction record. Anything $10,000 and above, you got an account. Nobody will take that kind of money. Yeah. You're not supposed to take that kind of money unless you fill out one of those forms and file it with. I don't know who you file it with.
I thought it was even less than that now. It's like $5,000.
Last I heard, it was $10,000.
Keeping your transactions under that number.
There's a lot of, you know, the FBI had a wiretap at the time, and an illegal wiretap, but they had a wiretap of Shoulders and talking to Costello, and they were saying they thought someone should look at the guys at the motel. So I don't know. I think supposition about that was they knew that they were probably being wiretapped, so they were just trying to throw the FBI and the police off because they knew they were really after them big time for this money. There was another guy involved, a guy named John Carr, if you remember, who I think he provided the prostitute or something. He had some connection to this, and there was some supposition that he took the money. But, you know, the policeman did not, if they left the money there and then went back and got it, which apparently most of the evidence will indicate that that's what happened, and they did bring half the money into the station, then the other half disappeared.
Well, you'd almost have to go back and, I mean, the only way to factually kind of document it, wouldn't it be to get the court records that they used for Hall?
Mm-hmm.
You would think there'd be an arrest record and some sort of an induction, right? And there'd be some, if there was any evidence, you know, personal items, they would put those in a locker or whatever. And then it seems, you know, like, They knew that this guy was that guy that kidnapped. So there's going to be a lot of money somewhere. And for the police then to be perjured, would you go back and be able to get that, like that material, where they came back and said, yeah, well, we brought Hall in, and then we brought the money in.
Yeah.
I mean, how else? Because it would seem like if you got Hall. Like if you go out to the and everyone's like, well, you know, he's flashing a lot of money, da da da. You're a police officer. Somebody tells you that this guy's flashing a lot of money. You don't look around the room.
No, they
you don't
did.
Open a you know you don't open the dresser drawer. You don't look in the closet like.
They knew that they
like
knew.
Hall said that they isn't that what Hall said he did.
They were. It was in a suitcase and a steamer trunk sitting in the room. I don't remember exactly where. He said that
the cop got the key to it though.
The cop would have seen the key to the room. He said the key to the room was there. He said that they didn't take the money when they took him in. They said they took the money when they took him in. And they proved
said,
that
and
they
he says that they didn't.
Right. They proved that they left him at the station and left.
And then money did show up, now, but just not all of it.
They think that they then brought the other half the money back in a back door of the police station, so nobody at the station saw them do that. Nobody at the station could say that they saw him bring the money in at all.
Which is odd, because they could have said that the money was all gone.
Yeah, really. I think they figured that if they just took half of it, there'd be a lot less heat, and maybe they could lay it off onto Carl Hall and say that, make it look like that he hid it somewhere, or the cab driver or prostitute or somebody else got it, or they hid it somewhere and they weren't telling anybody.
The guys from the motel.
I mean, that's how you do it. You just keep a lot of smoke out there in the air to kind of
distract people
from what really happened. Plus, in 1953, you know what you could do with $300,000?
Oh, man. If you owned the motel, I would have closed up and left.
Yeah, really.
I'm wondering if there's any kind of historical information about the...
I think this whole file's on in the FBI vault.
Yeah,
I think
there was a link there somewhere in the bottom of the Wikipedia page.
Yeah, I think there's a link to all the FBI reports are out there online if anybody wants to go pull them up and get them.
But I'm kind of curious about Lieutenant Scholder.